radio@firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Well, hello there, and we're here today at Firehouse Expo down in Baltimore. Tim Wall, chairman of the VCOS from Wallingford, Connecticut, volunteer fire chief with North Farms. And on our panel today, I have Chief Joe Florentino from Texas, and also a new guest, Anthony Mangieri, who is with the American Public University System. He's the assistant professor there on School of Public Safety. Today's topics include mutual aid agreements, automatic aid, and I'm sure it's on our mind every week is our budgets, whether it's making them, making sure we're on budget, and how do we provide our service within our budget. Also addressing or sharing some information on educational opportunities, and that's where we bring in Anthony, not only just talking about in your fire academy of moving from a fire one to fire two, but also maybe exploring and trying to share opportunities with you that are available through the National Fire Academy, your State of Fire Academy, and on the volunteer side, the weekend courses that are open, that are offered at the National Fire Academy. And I'd like to welcome our listeners to VCOS Radio here today. So with that, I'll start off by asking some general questions of what we're talking about tonight and have Anthony and Joe share what they think and what would be share with our listeners to help you as you're listening today. With that, Chief Florentino, let's go with what do you feel is the difference, or is there a difference between a mutual aid agreement and an automatic aid? You want to share that with us?
Well, I think the difference is, on an auto aid agreement, you have, engines, ladders, rescues, whatever you have written into your auto aid that are coming automatically when you have a certain type of alarm transmitted. I think mutual aid agreements are a little broader because you can, stretch across several towns, counties even, for people who have specialized equipment and make those agreements ahead of time to make sure that, when that certain type of call comes in, that you get the equipment you request.
Thank you, Chief Florentino. Mr. Mangieri, would you like to share anything on the mutual aid agreements and the automatic aid? And why don't you give a little background, because I know you have fire service background.
I've about 23 years in the fire service as a volunteer in a small town of Woodbury in New Jersey. I made it to the rank of Assistant Chief Safety Officer for 3 years, so I've served in leadership positions there. And I sit currently on the State Training and Education Advisory Council in New Jersey. My formal background is with New Jersey Emergency Management, where I was an operations planner. So mutual aid is actually a big part of my background, planning for crisis and working through understanding what's involved. I think automatic aid or mutual aid, regardless, there are two things you really have to pay attention to. You need to have an understanding of the expectations, financial expectations, liability expectations. The difference, I think, sometimes is that automatic aid or an automatic box where you're bringing in other stations, and we had a regional response for a while in Woodbury. It doesn't change the requirements, though, to make sure that you understand what exactly the expectations are. What happens if a firefighter gets hurt either going to the station because he's getting called to another district as a volunteer, or if a firefighter is injured on the job, God forbid, what are the requirements in, as far as liability, workers' comp, and such? These things need to be spelled out, and that's where a written mutual aid agreement covering both automatic aid and secondary support kind of helps out, because it just spells out the real expectations across the board administratively and operationally.
What I'm finding, discussing with other chiefs across the United States, and when we have our networking opportunity at the VCOS Symposium, that they think they're covered, but they're maybe not. And we also share with some of our friends and supporters of the VCOS on the insurance side, and they encourage, or in a conversation, that you should talk to your neighboring chief or several chiefs and sit down and explain what you're going to get, as Chief Florentino mentioned, and yourself, that also these things are taken care of, because you do hear them. What happens if the vehicle's in an accident? What happens if a personnel gets hurt? And I believe that's a better way, that if you talk those, and maybe you consult with your insurance carrier that you can get those things covered. And also an understanding that with mutual aid agreements and automatic aid, that you know what you're getting, what's coming, and how long, and you discuss it. You have like an open forum so everyone knows. And you also, I think, maybe would want to try to, don't wait for the call, but maybe have some interaction with your officers or your chief so that when you get to a situation, we meet each other on a controlled chaos at a call. So here's an opportunity to talk. What are your resources? Meet your neighbors, meet your fellow fire chief so you can have an understanding of what's there. Anthony, you have a comment to add to that?
Yeah, I do. The thing about automatic aid that you hit on that's very important, when you have an automatic aid relationship, you really are, you should be drilling together, you should be building operational strategies together, because that's an incoming apparatus that you're aware of exactly what their capabilities are, and you build it into your response systems. The other thing is you hit is very important is we don't all train together. We don't all... We'd like to standardize all the positions and all the training, but they're not always the same. So building those automatic aid relationships, especially from contiguous jurisdictions, which is always should be, the thing that you can do is you get an understanding right off the bat. How is their leadership trained? What is their command and control experience? What is their backgrounds and capabilities? You even exercise and train together so that you all have that common understanding responding to an incident, even using simple same terminology, all the traditional ICS arguments.
Joe, would you like to close on that subject matter?
No, I mean, I agree with Anthony. I don't, we do the same. Coming from small town, two station operation, we use automatic aid constantly. And, ISO, backs that you have to do the multi-company drill, and we do that quite frequently. We invite our neighboring towns in, all the first two engines in, and we train together. We try to do it at least twice a year.
And that's maybe going into our next subject about budgets and training, that your mutual aid partners or friends, you could probably maybe apply for a grant or look for some financial support in hosting or promoting a mutual aid or automatic aid drill together. I'm sure there's some opportunities out there. Well, another topic to discuss today on VCOS radio is budgets and the impact of budgets, what's going on in your area, and suggestions and to our audience and how they can look at their budgets and what other opportunities are out there to get finance and help them run their fire department and keep their personnel and going from there. So Anthony, what do you think about the budgets, or how do you impact budgets, or from your perspective on from where your background and where you come from on budgets?
The first thing I always vent about is that just because a service in a particular community is volunteer doesn't mean it's free. There is a cost and an expense that has to be realized. One of the ways to do that is an accounting principle called activity-based budgeting and activity-based costing. Even a volunteer firefighter, there is a cost to before you even get that personnel on an apparatus. The academy training, the gear at sum of $6,000 or $8,000 at this point, insurance, liability, background check, they're all expenses that need to be figured in. So you estimate how many volunteers you bring on or personnel you bring on in a year, and you see what that cost is compared to the number of alarms. I think that at least I'm seeing in my area in New Jersey that municipalities are stretching every dollar that they can, and things are very expensive. What you might have found in the past, a soft spot for volunteer service or career service, any public safety agency, we're starting to see direct challenges to those budgets. So actually going back to the previous topic of automatic aid, it's essential as a force multiplier that you build those relationships, because we just don't have the capacity. All at the same time, by the way, growth. Communities are growing. The fire load in a community, the master planning that has to be done has to keep going on so that you know what assets you need to address the threat in your community. Budgets are a way to validate a plan and strategy to staff your departments and resources to meet those needs, but you always have to base it on the load and master plan of your community. Then you have the data to go forward with a budget and make the argument you need to the fiscal people.
Thank you, Anthony. Joe?
Tim, you know, what I hear and some of what I read and what is being preached maybe by some of the town manager organizations, city manager organizations, is, you know, the new normal, that maybe we won't go back to a boom as big as it was. You know, in Texas, we boomed pretty well there right after the year 2000, even before that. But things were building and money was flowing in, and, you know, now they're saying, you know, the new normal. And but what I don't see is the master plan for that new normal. And that's, you know, scares me a little bit. The, I think, you know, from, my department is a city entity. We're a combination department with volunteers and career staff. And if you're going to have a new normal, then you're going to have to, what is the plan for the new normal? Just cutting things, not replacing a truck or not doing staff cars or cutting training. You know, cuts are easy, so to speak, because it's just a paper issue, dollars and cents. So it, if you're going to come up with a new normal, then the city has to go back and define its services and its core services. And, of course, I think, you know, public safety is at the root of that core service, along with, you know, streets, water, and sewer are also core. And you got to come up with a plan that I still need new tires for the vehicles. I still need to replace things. You don't want to put a Band-Aid on it, and that's what I see a lot of it. Let's not buy the new fire truck right now. And then all of a sudden it's put off for 5 years, and then you're competing 5 years down the road. Now police needs vehicles, you need vehicles, streets needs vehicles, and all we've done is put off the problem. So I think if we're in this new normal, I think people and town managers and cities and councils have to get serious. They have to define their core services and they have to plan for those. And I think it needs to be done now. I think putting things off is just a recipe for disaster.
Thank you, Chief Florentino. And would you recommend maybe to our listeners that you're talking about maybe a strategic plan or really get your department heads, whether it's a city manager, mayor, town council, whatever form of government you have, that it's time to get in a room with everybody and talk about your budget, talk about the, as you mentioned, core values of, you know, what's your fire department doing for the community, and have an understanding, and you may, you know, Band-Aid a problem. You know, okay, you're not going to purchase a new apparatus this year, or, you know, you come up with a, maybe some of you have that out there, but maybe you don't, but maybe look at an app, start doing an apparatus replacement plan. And it has a lot to do to keep that. You know, just use an example of your apparatus replacement plan. You know, the cost of vehicles are out there, whether it's an engine, ladder, a tanker. They're expensive, but they're vital to your core. You need them. The other part of the budget is saying, well, sure, you can go on finances for 2010, but, you know, what's the outlook for 2011? No one has that crystal ball. No one knows what's going to happen. But I guess if you maybe get the powers to be in a room and you brainstorm these and you talk about them and you discuss them and demonstrate, you know, whether it's on the fire side, the police side, public works, that Anthony mentioned this earlier, that one personnel, whether career or volunteer, there's a cost to that. You know, your apparatus, your ambulance, what's, you know, how many runs are you? You talked about community growth. You know, maybe 5 years ago, you didn't have a certain, you know, community, whether it's, okay, since then you've had two condominiums come in. Since then you've had a hospital come in. And, you know, what is the impact on your fire department supplying core values back to the customer? So, Anthony, what's your feeling, or what do you feel on budgets as we're kind of talking about? I mean, we can take budgets anywhere, but talking about core values and meeting the mission and vision of your...
You know, you use the term strategic plan, and budgets are, in fact, a plan of a spending plan. And if you keep that in mind, then like any plan, you need to have data and information. NFPA 1710, 1720 tells us response standards, and they need to be incorporated. You need to let your administrators know that you do have standards that, you're accountable for run times and how quick you have to get personnel on the ground and operational. Things like the ISO rating and how that could be affected based upon how the budget or equipment is affected in your community. Also, you need to know something that's very important. What do different costs or different types of responses cost? What is the typical response cost to a motor vehicle fire? What is the typical response cost to a motor vehicle crash, to a single-family structure fire, to an industrial structure fire? You need to know these things because then, as development is discussed, you can make an informed comment about, well, if we increase runs by 30%, the impact to the department will be this kind of cost, and we need to adjust our budget accordingly. The other thing is that you have to understand that developers don't want to move to areas that don't have infrastructure, and that includes fire and emergency service infrastructure. Developers are not going to invest in a community that doesn't have the infrastructure to support the development, because then they can't sell the property and make the return on investment that they need. So all these things keep in mind as you go back and talk about your budgets. But like any plan, you have to have data. You got to do your homework to know what these things cost, what the expenses are to the department, so that you can make informed discussions when you go in front of council or you go in front of an administrator and debate your budget. And then, as you said, you have to sit down and have a discussion. What's the impact of the cuts? What's the impact of the increase? Like any other business, towns want a return on their investment.
Thank you, Anthony. And the part of budgets, let's take it on a subject matter, is from your experience or what you're doing back home or hearing today at Firehouse Expo in Baltimore, an opportunity to network. That, you know, what are fire chiefs or administrators doing to help their budgets? Are they looking for federal grants? Are they trying to find individuals or associations that, give grants? And maybe the fire service should start opening their eyes and look out there. Where are other opportunities, and be creative where they can receive some type of money or some type of to their budget to help them run their organization? So, Chief Florentino, what do you feel on the budgets and trying to look outside for some type of resources?
Yeah, I mean, it's an absolute must. We are constantly looking for ways to bring in items or get programs sponsored. You know, our fire prevention program is, you know, always looking for sponsors. We try to work with the Chamber of Commerce and some of our businesses, and we try to promote their businesses while we do some of our programs. We have a wonderful power company called CoServe, which is a cooperative that has a foundation. They round up your bill by pennies, and then they take those pennies and they put them in an account for public safety. And I just received my second grant from them for $21,000 to buy a new heart monitor. You know, I apply to all the federal grants. You have to be creative. You have to constantly look. You hate to have to do it in some respects, but I don't see how you can't anymore.
Thank you, Chief Florentino. Anthony Mangieri?
I think that in the volunteer fire service, we often are aggressive about recruiting structural firefighters. We don't always think of the other personnel that go into making a fire department. And I think we need to be aggressive about recruiting from the community, subject matter experts, grant writers, engineers, people in the community that are very willing to help and be part of the fire department, not necessarily as a structural firefighter, but in their other capacities. In our community, we have an awful lot of people, being the county seat, that are involved and understand grant management. We have a large hospital in our community that does grant work as part of their thing. Building those relationships so that you can have those people assist you in going after money. Any fire department that's not going after SAFER grants and federal grants at this point is really missing an opportunity, both for their personnel and for their budget. The other thing is, I've heard some talk still in areas about fire districts, and there's a lot of sensitivity about fire districts. When budgets and taxes are tight, the last thing that a community wants to do from the political and administrative side is allow a new taxing entity. So I think that we do have to be creative. in looking for funding sources. Private sector foundations, large corporations in your area, using force multipliers of community education systems. County colleges may, in fact, have a public administration degree. So one of their classes, they may have a class on grant management. Maybe the fire department can seek them out, and they can help write grants to students so that they're getting credit. And at the same time, instead of just doing a project, they're doing a project that's relevant to their community. So everybody wins, and students will get practical experience in grant writing. But we do have to go after funding sources that are creative and different.
Thank you, Anthony. And leading into this discussion from Joe and Anthony would be that I use this term of recruiting, or this area of recruiting, is thinking outside the box. You talked about whether it's a structural firefighter, you're looking on the volunteer side, or EMS personnel. There's an organization called FireCorps, www.firecorps.org, where you have an opportunity to have people assist you who don't want to be a fire person, don't want to drive your apparatus, but maybe as an accountant, maybe as an engineer, maybe as a banker in your community, that, you know, he or she just wants to come down and do something, you know, community involvement. On the volunteer side, you do it because you're involved in your community. But FireCorps is an excellent opportunity that you can get some resources. And they become part of your organization when that, and it's a buy-in for them. It's not just the fire department contacting the local bank or the local manufacturer and saying, hey, we need something, you know, to help us run our fire department. But engage them in your organization. Look at potentially working to start a FireCorps program. And information is available on the VCOS website along with the National Volunteer Fire Council website. So think outside the box, because that may help you in your recruiting. And then it's that either strategic plan or that circle is that you fire guys or fire chiefs or fire personnel think fire. They don't think the business side sometimes. And you bring these individuals in and they give you a business plan underneath your strategic plan. You know, we know fire, we know what we have to do, but it's like getting someone from the outside to come in and saying, hey, you're right on target, but if you move over to the right or left, I think that's a better. And you're getting their expert knowledge in budgeting, in engineering, whatever it may be. So
even
think of that.
Specking out a truck.
Yep.
Steve, I wanted to add, you reminded me, and I wanted to add, in many communities, there's something called a volunteer center, and there's organizations like RSVP, retired senior volunteer systems, and executive volunteers, people who were corporate leaders who retired and now are volunteers. And you can find them through your community volunteer center. There's no reason you can't post there. For example, if you need somebody to help you with accounting or budgeting, to get a volunteer to do that. The other thing is, ironically, do you know why most people who were asked, there was a study done, I remember years ago when I used to do volunteer management, they asked people, what was the number one reason why you chose to volunteer? And they said, because somebody asked. You know, we have to remember, get out and ask. And that's really what it's about. Get out and ask.
And that's a benefit for your fire department on the long haul is ask. And you look at your personnel or your fire department, EMS provider, you know, ask your friends. Get involved. Because like people sometimes say, I wasn't asked. And if you asked me, I would do it. Chief Florentino, we were mentioning a little bit earlier, we talked about a little about standards and ISO, and is there a feeling that sometimes you think in the fire service and why you have an opportunity to talk with your fellow fire chiefs, whether at a meeting or networking opportunity, that, you know, NFPA and ISO are, you know, aren't our friends or are our friends? And how do you think people look at that? To share with you, it's getting to know the NFPA standards. It's getting to know ISO and what they offer and the opportunity of what they offer and help you be a better manager, a better fire chief, a better leader by maybe meeting with them and having an open discussion.
I agree. I think from A to Z, if you're in this business and you don't understand those two things, NFPA or ISO, then you're way behind the curve. Like Anthony mentioned, those standards that NFPA are constantly being used in my budget preparations because I think that's an education that you counsel, or how your town is governed, or who you're asking your money from, needs to be educated to. You know, and we not only do them, but we also do the public through our Citizens Fire Academy program. We talk about these standards because that's what we're striving for. We're trying to meet some of these goals, and I think they're very important in how you shape your department. So, you know, I totally agree. These are things that that chiefs need to get on board with.
So you're maybe suggesting to our listeners that, you know, engage a conversation with ISO?
Oh, I think so. And I'm not saying you have to totally agree with everything that they say, but you know, but that's an opportunity. If you want to get in there and make changes, then, you know, you get involved like you and I have done with the International Association of Fire Chiefs. Those present opportunities to be right up front with NFPA. If you have an opportunity to get on a committee or at least attend and know when all the meetings are and provide your feedback, then you can have a say.
Thanks, Joe. Anthony?
I think that, no, I really have nothing else to add to the discussion there. I think we've talked a lot about involvement. We've talked a lot about gleaning community support and using your community as a force multiplier, but you absolutely have to know your data, and the standards help you to validate the reasons that you need the tools and resources to get the job done. An administrator may not know that you have a run clock requirement. They may not know that you have a standard two in, two out rule and what exactly that means. And you need to explain those things to validate why you need certain assets and certain personnel in a department.
Well, in sharing those subject matters with us for a few minutes here on VCOS Radio, that maybe an added stress to our fire chiefs along with town and city managers, because you have to make those decisions. You know, you have to say, okay, do we fund a new truck? Do we build a new firehouse? Do we look at our personnel and see how we're doing that? But it's not easy out there. And I wonder if it's going to get easier or the challenge is going to be there. But it's another thing that, you know, if you engage and talk and have an open discussion and share this information by meeting with your other elected officials, whether it's your mayor, city manager, and discuss this and go back to your budget. You know, what's your budget this year compared to be what's next year? You know, where do you see yourself in 2 to 3, 5 years? Goes back as we talked a little bit about strategic planning for your budget. Well, any more recommendations before we go on to our next subject matter on budgets? Chief Florentino?
I don't think I have anything to add, Tim, on that.
Anthony, anything to add before we go to our next subject matter on budgets or areas to find some assistance?
No, I think we've talked quite a bit. I think the biggest thing to remember is to have your data when you go do a budget. When you're working with a budget, it is a plan, and any plan needs data and needs a strategic approach. And you have to inform and educate those people that are approving or voting on your budget. They may not know the rules and standards. They may not know, for example, 3 years down the line, the interoperability requirements from DHS are going to mandate maybe a county trunk system, radio system. So you're going to have to plan out to buy radios for the apparatus because you're going to move to a different frequency. They may not know all that. That's technical data that you need to inform and educate them in a way that they'll understand why you need the money and resources you need.
Thank you, Anthony. We're here with VCOS Radio, Tim Wall, Volunteer Fire Chief with North Farms Volunteer Fire Department, also the chair of the VCOS, and talking about some of the things that the VCOS offer back as some budget items. Available on the VCOS website is some opportunities for scholarships to attend the Symposium in the Sun in November, along with FRI in August. This year, FRI is in Chicago, so I encourage our listeners to go to VCOS.org and look that up and get some resources and get some information, along with some other stuff that we offer on our website to share with you. The ribbon reports, the 5 ribbon reports that we've written and provided for the fire service are available to you, downloadable. Well, we'll move on to our next topic of our day's discussion. We've been talking about mutual aid agreements, automatic aid, discuss budgets, and maybe trying to be creative of looking for other ways to receive some money, and also how do we help with our budgets ourselves. But let's go on to some educational opportunities that are out there in the fire service or EMS provider, along with the National Fire Academy and some things they offer in your state academy. And as I've opened up the program, we're not just talking about going from EMT to paramedic or from fire one to fire officer. It's the background of the associate's degree, the bachelor's degree, the EFO program at the National Fire Academy, things that are available to you and your research a little bit by visiting those websites. So Chief Florentino, why don't we take the side of going into like the National Fire Academy and the EFO and some of the things that you know of and you've attended and be part of. Chief Florentino?
Yeah, you know, I don't know how to explain the Executive Fire Officer Program, but it's, you know, it's on another level. And if you've ever attended the National Fire Academy, then you'll know what I'm talking about. It's just a total enrichment process going to the National Fire Academy, because it's not just academics. They preach networking. They preach sharing ideas, and everything that you work on is trying to solve a problem in today's fire service. It's not just some random topic. So it's so beneficial in so many ways, and even the relationships that you make up there, you know, really last a long time. And those are people you can count on as you go through your career. So can't emphasize enough to make use of the National Fire Academy, especially at that terrific cost, which is, you know, totally reimbursable. So it's really hard to pass up. And it's a shame that more people don't take full advantage of that opportunity.
Well, hopefully with us sharing with our listeners on VCOS Radio today that maybe they'll look at the National Fire Academy and the opportunities to be there, and as you mentioned, the cost, because there are no costs. I think you have to supply your transportation to go there. Numerous classes are being offered, and they also, on the volunteer side, give an opportunity of the weekend courses that they've also put them on the road, that if you contact your state academy, that you can find that there are some, you know, 16-hour classes or courses that they can bring into your community that are sponsored and supported financially by the National Fire Academy. Dr. Dennis O'Neill does a wonderful job there. I know the VCOS has a great relationship with Dr. O'Neill, and we try to market and promote what the National Fire Academy is doing to educate and help our brothers and sisters involved in this great profession. Anthony, on your side and your background through American Public University, and being an assistant professor there, and also your networking and people you met, how about on the side of looking of the education side of bachelor's, master's, and whatever else you would want to try to bring to the table?
This is an important discussion. There is actually, from an academic perspective, there's a difference between education and training, but there are overlaps, and there are ways and considerations that you should have. Volunteer fire service in the United States is 70-75%, careers 25-30%. Many of the career departments are hiring volunteers. It's one of the paths through to the career departments. And you have to remember that while most departments currently do not require more than a high school degree, you're in competition. What makes you different than any other recruit or volunteer or person that's applying for those positions? And one of those things that makes a difference is your educational background. So you need to look at an associate's, a bachelor's, even a master's degree, depending on what you do as you go through your progression. And there are some other things to think about. The EFO program, NFA, FEMA, DHS, all have, even state and local academies, have credits for college in many cases associated with those courses that you're taking on a regular basis. Not all, not every, and that's why I say there's a difference between education and training, because it depends on how it's presented, how you're evaluated, and some other considerations. But the EFO program, for example, or even taking a course at your local academy, it may have been reviewed for college credit. Many fire academies now, for example, are affiliated with local community colleges or technical schools. So there may actually be credits available just from going through an academy, whether career or volunteer. So you may be on your way to an associate's and not even know it. Glean those things and take advantage of the opportunity. Some jurisdictions actually give even volunteer firefighters, particularly volunteer firefighters, opportunity to go to a local community college. I know in New Jersey there was a program, you could go to a local community college. I think it was up to $4,000 for your family and tuition, seats available basis. It's available. It's part of the process that's available in the state. So you need to look at what your state might have for you to help fund that opportunity. The other thing is most departments don't have a high school or don't have an education requirement above high school. But, you know, especially as you start to go up through the ranks, you want to be in a career department. You want to make yourself marketable. If you want to move the ranks, move up the ranks, especially in a career department to a senior staff member, you know, having that degree makes you more marketable. It makes you identifiable as different. And the other thing it really does is it shows your commitment to improving yourself and to finding out and researching what's necessary to improve your department, yourself, your community. When you go to pick a university or school to go to, there's a couple things I suggest. One of them is you really do want to look at a school that follows the FESHE model. FESHE stands for Fire and Emergency Services in Higher Education. It is actually something that was started by National Fire Academy. Believe it or not, universities that present fire service or fire service management curriculums, we get together at the National Fire Academy once a year, and we go over curriculums and standards and what should be taught and shouldn't be taught, what's good, what's best, at what levels should things be looked at. And we've even developed their NFA and the FESHE group have developed a standard for fire service education. The other obvious thing is accreditation. You want to make sure a facility is accredited and institutions accredited. American Military University and our sister school, American Public University, are both regionally and nationally accredited, and that's a distinctive difference. You want to make sure that there's good accreditation. And to be quite honest with you, I tell people all the time, look at the faculties at the schools you want to go to when you're starting to pick a college. And ask yourself, are these people I want to learn from? Don't just pick a school arbitrarily. Stop and look. Are these people I want to learn from? Do they have something to teach me? And there's a new tool for going back to college and getting your degree, and that's online education. American Public University System, American Military University, American Public University, we're actually an online school. And the advantage to that is, and it's particularly when you're doing shift work or as a volunteer firefighter, when you're working 40 to 50 hours a week and you're also doing duty at station, it's an opportunity for you to continue your education from home. You don't have that added responsibility or effort to go to a traditional school or brick and mortar school. It is not for everyone, but it is a tool that's available. If you're a career firefighter and you're working shift work, you don't have to take that personal leave time to go to college. You can do it online now. And again, make sure the schools are accredited. Make sure the faculties are people you want to learn from. But it is now a new tool to make sure fire personnel are getting the degrees and the education that they need to improve themselves and to improve their departments.
Thank you, Anthony. Tim Wall wants to take you back to a couple of themes that I'm hearing here where, you know, there is a difference between education and training. Networking is a key point, whether it's like a Firehouse Expo here in Baltimore, or you mentioned that you network back at the Fire Academy where you say you go in and you do some networking and talking. And online opportunities, online education seems to be a buzzword in the fire service today. There are other companies out there that you can work with or research and help. But, what do you feel is we mentioned those topics, education, training, networking. Online education, you don't get those. You don't get that touchy-feely thing where you're networking or you're attending a class or you see the presenter or you have a chance to talk with the presenter. Anthony, what's your feeling on that, or what do you want to share with our listeners today on VCOS Radio?
Well, first of all, I do appreciate that you mentioned that there are other universities. I don't want to pretend that we're the only shop in town, and actually we're fairly transparent, so we do want you to research and make sure where you go and that you pick the right reasons to go to an institution. I think I get asked this a lot, actually, being a faculty of an online university, and I also teach at a county college. The main difference is the way the class is run and facilitated. And I think that online education does not necessarily mean that you lose the opportunity to network. In my particular case, our average student is 37 years old. 60% of them are current and former military. We have students from all over the world. So when I'm teaching a WMD class, for example, and I'm talking about explosives, you know, there's no better networking than to have a guy in the discussion board who's an EOD technician sitting in Afghanistan looking at improvised devices all day long that can discuss current trends and practices. So I think there is networking opportunities, more than you'd be surprised, more than you think. The discussion boards and the way we interact in the classrooms do promote interactive discussion. A lot of our students network together. But it is different. I won't lie to you. You don't see me in front of a classroom standing there, even though I occasionally put video on my discussion boards. They, of course, tell me to take it down. They don't need to see me. They just need to hear me. But it is a different methodology. That's why I said it's not for everyone. But there's a value in that, in the way it impacts on your life, that you can continue along and not impact your family and your career. And that's an important thing. So it's another tool.
Well, so speaking of tools, we're using a tool here today by having a podcast.
Absolutely.
It wasn't available several years ago. And now you're looking at online training. Webinars is a big popularity now. That the trend is growing. And I look at myself as being the older volunteer fire chief, and the new students coming in, just graduating from Fire One or EMS coming in. I mean, they have that technology of the computer, the texting, the cell phone, and, you know, they want the availability instantly right now. And with webinars, and we can maybe touch upon about that, is there's another opportunity of webinars that are out there through various organizations, and you can find topics and listen in and participate and register. Chief Florentino, on the topics we're kind of sharing here with our listeners of education, training, online education, and webinars, what has been in your experience, or what would you like to share on those topics?
Well, I think, you know, I've done a little of everything. Even like Anthony said, you know, some things I enjoyed and some things I didn't. And I don't think it was who was presenting it. I think it was just what I'm comfortable with and how I adapt to learning. So some of that is trial and error. I think, you know, we do have a lot of new things afforded to us, and I think our members need to go out and try some of these things. I'm sure there are some people who just think it's not for them without trying it, and they just need to dive in and see what works. You know, it's important. I encourage my officers for some of them to try to finish their college degrees. It certainly helped me in my career. I have a 4-year degree. A neat thing that we have in Texas is that any college who receives state funds, then any firefighters eligible to take classes there, and they'll waive the fees on the credit hours. So there's still some fees involved in attending, but it's a neat thing, and I have some members who are taking advantage of that.
Chief Florentino, you brought up a key word there, is I think to our listeners is contact, do some research, start calling around and see what's out there. And I know Anthony shared earlier that some of your training you got as a firefighter or a paramedic or EMT may go to some college credits, and you're saying, wow, I didn't know I had that. And again, we're just encouraging our listeners today on VCOS Radio to start asking some information, get engaged, and what's out there. And maybe either as a chief officer, share that with your boss or to the firefighters or EMS personnel listening that, hey, let me research a little bit and bring it to my boss or bring it to my chief, and it helps everybody. Anthony, on the side of you know, webinars and online education and your experience of what's happening there and another tool in the fire chief's toolbox, as we say.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head, and I just was interviewed yesterday about simulations and the use of gaming. The current group of young adults that are coming through, students that are coming through, you know, they grew up in a different generation. They grew up in a generation very technically savvy, very much learning. I laugh. My son, I joke with him all the time, his subject matter expertise on weaponry is phenomenal, because he plays Call of Duty 4, he plays the active shooter or first shooter games, and he's learned an awful lot. That's how they learn, is through that multi-sensory approach to things. Using technology is essential. There are now technologies out there that will allow you to do kind of tabletop exercises on steroids, where you're almost put into a simulation where you can imagine your decision making and how your decisions are affected by what you do. And that's essential. It gives us the opportunity in a safe environment to practice skill sets of decision making during stressful conditions. It's real easy to sit in a room and make a decision when you've got all the time in the world, but let's start compressing that time and limiting the amount of knowledge you have and putting you in an environment where sounds and smells are going to bring your mind to that environment that you're going to make stressful situations, and you start to narrow your field of focus, you start to narrow your situational awareness, so you can fight that by running these scenarios over and over and building an understanding. And that's using technology to overcome a standard human behavior of situational blindness in some cases. So technology is making a big difference. The other thing is technology and access. As you said, this podcast, you know, 10 years ago would be a whole different discussion. Webinars now we can bring, and the university, AMU is involved heavily in webinars, and with IAFC actually we'll be doing some work. And, you know, it brings the opportunity to get a subject matter expert from anywhere in the world and make him available to everyone who can sign into the webinar. And you can capture and document it so that down the road you could replay it, you could have that lecture available, and that subject matter expert doesn't have to be flown into an area, nor do you have to assemble and have the cost of going to a conference or going to a seminar to hear someone. There's some great opportunity in webinars to address specific topics.
Thank you, Anthony. And recapping our call today on VCOS Radio, the subject matters that we have shared with our listeners, mutual aid agreements, automatic aid, budgets, educational opportunities, whether in your state, what's available through the National Fire Academy, the weekend courses, and on the side of education, got into, you know, the little difference between education and training, or a lot of difference between education and training, networking opportunities, online education, along with webinars. And the VCOS itself has just taken on offering webinars that are available to the audience, and you go to the VCOS website and you get information on that. Welcome our listeners today on VCOS Radio. Again, it's Tim Wall, Volunteer Fire Chief in Wallingford, Connecticut, along with Chairman of the VCOS, Anthony Mangieri with the American Public University System, Assistant Professor, School of Public Safety, and Chief Joe Florentino from Texas. And of the topics we talked about today in closing out our podcast, can you just give a closing minute or two about these subject matters, or would you like to share anything else with our audience that's listening? Chief Florentino?
Tim, I'll just touch again on the budgets. I think, you know, there's an emotional attachment to what we do, and, a lot of administrators and finance people, it's just dollars and cents on a piece of paper, and where they can make cuts. And that's, again, like Anthony was talking about, we have to continue to educate what we do, how we do it, talk about our standards. What you can't translate, which I tell some of the council members, is that, you know, if our call statistics and everything state that I should have two ALS ambulances available and I only have staffing for one, those dollars and cents on those cuts don't translate when I'm standing in a living room talking to a wife whose husband's having a heart attack and I'm waiting for an ambulance from another town. So, you know, it's a continual education. It's not just about dollars and cents. And, you know, we've got an uphill battle in these economies coming up, but I think if we do our homework, you know, we should come out fine.
Thank you, Chief Florentino. Anthony Mangieri?
When we talk about education, you know, there is no replacement for hands-on education or hands-on training when we're dealing with tactical and we're dealing with training that focuses on tactical skill sets and competencies. But when we're dealing with theory, or we're dealing with leadership, or we're dealing with other opportunities to discuss and debate and network with other like professionals, there's some real new emerging technology out there, and emerging in that it's now readily available. You don't need a satellite dish, for example, to get a webinar anymore, and the internet has provided us opportunities to network and to share information and education better than we've ever had before. So we learn differently, the new generation learns differently, and technology really is one of those ways. And one of those tools, as I pointed out, is online education systems. Just make sure, as I said, look at the accreditations, look at the faculty, and make sure there are people you want to learn from. So I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Anthony. So we have to do our homework. I guess we have to...
That's the bottom line of today.
Is do our homework and research a little bit, ask some questions, don't be bashful, and again, do some web search, talk with the university that's in your state or local, or share with your academy, and then you can bring it back to your boss or your chief to share with your membership, and that will improve, you know, your morale in your fire department and your challenges, and saying, hey, I want to take this course. Really not that bad. Why don't you try it? You know, bring somebody with you. Make the education better. So Tim Wall says, thank you for listening today on VCOS Radio, an opportunity here at Firehouse Expo in Baltimore. Next VCOS Radio will be done in November at the VCOS Symposium. And thank you very much for listening. Have a good day and stay safe.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.